Bloomberg Surveillance with Michael McKee and Tom Keane. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Michael Shaul is with Market Field Asset Management. And we're wondering if this is the end of RICO, to go back to Jimmy Cagney days. Michael, is gold just so far out of factor that there is, out of favor that there is not a net underneath it at this point?
Well, there is a bit of a net right here. You know, I think everybody knows it bounced off at 1180 level, you know, a few months ago. And I think there is a little bit of support here. And you know, you've had people come in and pick up small amounts of the metal. But, you know, if you break down below that 1180 level, then, you know, the next net is, you know, maybe another 15-20% below that. I mean, you start looking at that sort of big round number around the thousand, you know, around 1,000, you know, to really catch gold. And you know, that's one of the problems with really long bull markets when they end is that, you know, you get prices so far extended that you have to go a long way down to really regenerate support.
The last time we talked about this, the theory was you get to this level and the support is in part there because you've got jewelry buying. That it's not, you know, speculative buying anymore, but there is some active buying because people want the metal for an actual use. Is that the story that we're watching?
Look, I mean, the gold market has always been made up of multiple factors. There's physical buying, you know, there were the Indian peasants which were meant to come to the metals rescue a few hundred dollars higher, you know, the Chinese were meant to be buying it, and then there's a whole lot of people who have it as a financial instrument. You know, I try not to be, you know, too much of a perfectionist in terms of understanding this. I think that if you simply look at a long-term chart of gold, it looks like an absolutely classic bear market. And my guess when gold peaked at 1900 was that this would be a 50%. In other words, gold would lose around 50% of its peak value. And, you know, I think we're three quarters of the way there now, and I don't see any point in giving up on that call, you know, given that it's sort of worked so far. So I think it's easier to see gold down at that 1,000 level than going up significantly. You know, I think there's a lot of, you know, a lot of uncertainty in terms of when exactly this happens. I would note that we have a lot of support here. It wouldn't shock me if gold bounced. But I think the ramifications, if gold fails to bounce here, are really quite significant. And that's what you've got to bear in mind, is that if you do take out support, typically a bear market bounces around, goes through support, and then really accelerates to the downside. And I would expect to see that pattern if we lose touch with current price levels.
Michael, how much are hedge funds driving gold prices lower? We know that they're less and less bullish constantly, and they've been reducing their net long positions consistently over the last couple of weeks, contributing to this annus horribilis for gold. Do you watch what money managers are doing, what the speculators are doing?
Well, it's, you know, as I said, there's so many independent data points out there. As I say, I just kind of like look at price, and if it goes down, you know, there's more sellers than buyers. But one factor I would bear in mind is the, you know, in a lot of the large hedge funds over the last, you know, so 2-3 years ago, there was a great push to get their investors to use what we called a gold class, which is you bought XYZ fund and you invested not in terms of U.S. dollars, but in terms of gold.
Like Paulson's funds.
Yes, he was one of the people that did that, but he was not alone. Now, you know, what happens is you have certain windows where you could swap back from being a gold investor to a straight U.S. dollar investor, and one of those big obvious windows will be December 31st. So, you know, I do wonder whether or not it's not only that a hedge fund would be selling its gold, but it may already have notice that several large holders are switching out of the gold series into the U.S. dollar series. And that and a host of other sort of technical taxation reasons, I think the sort of really dangerous period for gold is, of course, this sort of last week of the, you know, this last week of the year with quiet markets and a lot of real technical selling pressure.
What about silver prices? That's an industrial metal, but it also has those properties of being a safe haven.
We sort of call silver poor man's gold, and you know, I think its relationship to gold is sort of similar to, say, the Russell 2000 versus the S&P 500. It's a sort of small cap precious metal. You know, we compared gold to the S&P in the late 1990s a couple of years ago, and we compared silver to the Nasdaq. And if gold is in the middle of a 50% move, then, you know, silver's probably in the middle of something like an 80% downdraft, which, you know, if you started at 50, would give you an eventual target of around 10. You know, again, silver is kind of clinging onto this really important support. And, you know, I would say, you know, I would think in terms of round numbers, 1750, 15, you know, as your potential downside.
Right.
And I don't, you know, I think silver does have some industrial uses.
But I want to get your take on the economy as well, because you noted that the third quarter GDP was revised higher at the end of last week, and these revisions make it seem that the initial print is kind of pointless, given that it's never correct and it's kind of all over the map. Why is it then that people still trade so readily and so quickly on something like the jobs report, which notoriously gets revised the following month?
Oh, I guess the same reason why you guys talk about it in real time. I mean, it's these things get attention, and they generate volatility, and people sort of really trade off them. But, I mean, we've always advised our investors to really take a step back from economic data, to really treat it with a pinch of salt. And I said, if you're really lucky, good economic data tells you where you used to be. And I think what you have to bear in mind for this particular cycle is that it has consistently run ahead of expectations, and we should expect it to continue to do so. You know, monetary conditions are very, very, very generous, and I think the likelihood remains that you're going to be surprised to the upside over the next year or so.
Okay, so if the data tells you where the economy was, what are you looking at to tell you where the economy will be? What asset class?
You know, I think equities are probably, you know, your best indication. And I think as far as fixed income is concerned, it's going to really be about the middle of the curve right now. I mean, everybody wants to know where the 10-year is going. I don't really care where the 10-year is going. I really care where the 5-year is going, because that yield is much, much more sensitive to where the Fed is going to be 1, 2, 3 years down the road. And I guess my concern is that we have just turned the direction of monetary policy. And historically, whenever the Fed changes its mind about the direction, it's the beginning of a much, much more powerful move than anybody would have considered possible. And, you know, that's true in both directions. You know, we have just gone from loosening monetary policy consistently from the middle of 07 to till last week to a direction which is now towards tighter monetary policy. And I think if we, you know, if we look at where the Fed may be in a couple of years' time, I think it's going to be a very, very different place to where anybody, including the Fed, thinks is possible today.
Well, given the reaction we've seen to the Fed, is it fair to say, Michael, that the Fed is the one that's really killed gold here?
No, I just think that the enthusiasm killed gold. I mean, I, you know, if you sort of went back to where it was a couple of years ago, people really had convinced themselves this was a one-way trade, and I think just, you know, too much money really kind of went into it. What I would say now is that gold, you know, does not like higher interest rates, and I do think that the Fed may now put additional pressure on gold and may sort of keep it lower for longer than otherwise would have been the case. But no, I wouldn't particularly blame the Fed for what's happened to gold.
Well, you mentioned higher interest rates. Rates went up a little bit, but they have held at about 2.9 for the 10 and 0.38 for the 2, and, you know, even the 5 is stuck in a range here. Did they manage to convince you and others in the markets that tapering is not tightening?
Well, I think that's true, and I don't think tapering is tightening. But what I would bear in mind is that this Fed has been pretty poor at actually understanding this economic cycle. It's got the employment cycle completely wrong. It never expected unemployment to be down at 7% today, you know, which is where it is. And all of the interest rate expectations now are being driven by the notion that the Fed understands the inflationary cycle. And I don't think they're going to be any better at understanding the inflationary cycle than they were about the unemployment cycle. So, you know, you have the Fed now obsessing that inflation is too low. Ignoring the fact that unemployment continues to come down above expectations, and, you know, really kind of not understanding that we're going to have full employment in certain parts of the country within 6 to 12 months. And we're going to have full employment in very specific sectors within 6 to 12 months. And from that point on, I think inflationary pressures really start to build. So, as I say, tapering, by the time they delayed it and telegraphed it as a possibility, you know, in the end was something of a non-event. event, but we are in a constant process of moving within an economic cycle, and we remain ahead of expectations, and we're accelerating ahead of expectations. And so, you know, tapering was merely one episode in what I think is going to be a pretty interesting couple of years here.
All right, got to leave it there. Michael Show, thank you very much for joining us.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.